It is 6:06 on the Central Coast. It happens to be Tuesday, February 16th, 2021. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Always good to be with you. Well, in this final hour, I'm not sure why anyone is surprised. Elections have consequences. And Joe Biden said that he was going to push for changes in gun laws if he was elected. And guess what? He's pushing for changes in gun laws. But equally interesting is this congresswoman from Texas, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, who makes, in my opinion, Biden look tame. Anyway, always good to be in conversation with Matt Hoy tonight, wearing his hat with restrictedarms.com is his website. Mr. Hoy, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Congleton.
How are
good
you,
to
sir?
Be here with you.
Yeah, appreciate your time. And we could spend an hour just on Biden, but I can't overlook Congresswoman Lee, who I admit, until you sent me the article, I really wasn't aware of her. She's been around for a while, 14 terms.
Yeah, she's been in Congress a while. If people had heard of her before, it was probably about 10 years ago when there was some controversy, because apparently, looking it up online, she had somebody who had a first-class ticket had been kicked off a flight in order for Mrs. Jackson Lee to sit in first class. There was another issue with another airline where she would schedule multiple, or she would reserve multiple first class tickets back to her district, you know, on Friday nights once Congress was done with its work for the week, and then would cancel all of them but one. It got to best so bad that Continental Airlines basically said, please fly with someone else. And the other thing is of note about her is that the Washingtonian magazine and some other things have pointed out that she regularly appears on the magazine's list of best and worst of Congress as the meanest member of the House of Representatives and the worst boss on Capitol Hill. She went through 11 chiefs of staff in 11 years and has the most staff turnover because she's just apparently a holy terror to people who work for her.
Well, and now Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is the primary sponsor behind this bill, H.R. 127. Holy cow. This is what I jotted down. Requires the registration of every firearm to the federal government. You get 3 months to accomplish this. If you buy a gun, you're also required to undergo 24 hours of mandatory firearms training. Holy cow.
Yes. Well, it's not if you buy a firearm. If you have a firearm and want to continue to own it, you will have to go through 24 hours of mandatory firearms training a year for the first 5 years.
Does she have a history on this issue, Matt?
Not any more or any less than, you know, other Democrats that have, you know, talked about things. This bill is, you know, if politics didn't matter, this is what the gun control left, the most strident ones, would like gun control in this country to look like. 24 hours of training a year if you own a firearm. You've got to register any firearms you own with the federal government within 3 months of when this passes. Good luck with that happening, kind of. I mean, there are so many guns that this would crash any system. California tried to do something, did something similar a few years ago with registration of, you know, so-called bullet button assault weapons. It took California a year and a half to set up the computer system to take care of that, and even then it was kind of a hot mess as far as, you know, people who tried to register them had all sorts of problems because it wasn't, you know, well done.
So I just want to emphasize this for our listeners. requires a registration of every single firearm. So if you own 12 weapons, you'd have to register all of those. It's not just if you buy a new weapon. It's any weapon you currently have, you have to register.
Right. You have to register, and the government has to create a database of all of these weapons, and that database is accessible to the general public. So if you've got guns and you register them, I mean, if you're a criminal, it's like, well, I'd like this kind of gun. You can go on a government database, search them out, find out who owns it, where their house is, and, I mean, it's insane.
But what is Congresswoman Jackson Lee trying to accomplish with this? Just say it worked. Give her the benefit of the doubt for a minute. What is she arguing this would accomplish?
I think she wants to make firearm ownership so onerous and expensive that only people like Michael Bloomberg, the very rich, can ever own a gun in this country. I mean, there's other things in here that cost a lot of money too. In addition to that 24 hours of firearms training, you've got to see a psychologist approved by the Attorney General. Not only do you have to see a psychologist, your spouse has to see a psychologist too. And if you're divorced, your ex can come in and voice their concerns about whether you should have a gun, and two other family members. So a minimum of three people, four if you're married, even more than that if you're a divorcee, would have to see a shrink once a year for the first 5 years to be able to keep the guns you already own. After 5 years, they'll have a license that renews every 3 years.
I want to talk about Biden after the break, but in terms of this H.R. 127, assess for us, Matt, the mood you think in Congress. I mean, the Democrats control the Senate, barely, but they do control it. They control the House. Are they inclined to pass legislation like this?
It's not going to happen. There's lots of Second Amendment groups that are raising a lot of money on this. She has zero co-sponsors, not a single one. This is not serious legislation. This is a look into the mind of a rabid anti-Second Amendment gun controller, and this is what I mean. This is probably what she'd like to see, 10 or 15 years from now, if they packed the Supreme Court and added a couple more states, so you had, Puerto Rico and D.C. had two senators each and that sort of thing. This is what they would do if they had all the power. This is not politically palatable, even to a good chunk of Democrats.
Yeah. As you were explaining, it doesn't even seem feasible. It doesn't even seem workable at any level.
It wouldn't be. For a political party that wants to talk about criminal justice reforms, the penalties for violating some of this is outrageous. If you had a piece of ammunition, not even a gun to shoot it down, but if you made a piece of ammunition that's 50 caliber or larger, note that this would be like things like old black powder rifle, like muskets used during the Civil War, had ammunition. All they were lead balls, and a judge in Washington, D.C. has said that lead ball is ammunition, even though you need gunpowder to fire it. If you possess ammunition 50 caliber or larger, penalty, $50,000 to $100,000 fine and a 10 to 20 year prison sentence per item of ammunition.
Makes perfect sense. Matt Hoy is with us from restrictedarms.com. Talking a little bit about Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas and this bill where she is the sole sponsor. When we come back, let's expand the conversation on a more serious analysis. What lies ahead with what President Biden is proposing? Your phone call still to come. On AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. Glad to have you with us on Hometown Radio. I'm Dave Congleton. We are in conversation with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. We spent the first segment talking about this congresswoman from Texas who has this very sweeping legislation she's proposing. But Matt and I agree, we don't think it's going anywhere. Of a larger concern, I would imagine, to those of you who are gun enthusiasts, is President Biden and what he is trying to do. And Matt, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is something Biden has said all along he was going to do as a candidate, right?
Yeah, it's he's got a website page that's pretty extensive on gun safety. And he ran on this. This is kind of standard. No, I wouldn't say centrist, but it's somewhere in the center of the Democratic Party's, gun control agenda. There's not too much of it that's, there are some things that are, I think, similarly kind of outlandish, and not well thought through. But, the big picture stuff is, pretty standard kind of center of the Democratic Party gun control wish list.
Well, here are a couple things I jotted down. We can go through one by one. One, Biden wants firearm sales background checks. How does that work, Matt?
Well, right now, if you buy a firearm at a retail business anywhere in the country, you have to go through a background check. If you want to buy any firearm anywhere from anybody in California, you have to go through a background check. There are some states that allow sales or even transfers of guns between individuals who that's not part of their business. It's just, it's like if you've got an extra car, if you bought a new car and you want to sell your old one, you put it up on Craigslist or something like that, or put it on a flyer or something and stick it up at your local grocery store. If it's just between individuals in certain states, it doesn't need to go through a background check. So he wants to make every state in the country like California, basically. There are pluses and minuses to that. One of the things that kind of California's background check law does, and Washington State recently passed one as well, is, if I have a firearm and I want to give it to my father-in-law, not my father, my father's different, but if I want to give it to my father-in-law, I've got to go with him to a gun store. We've got to fill out paper. We've got to pay $30 or so for the background check. And he's got to wait 10 days to receive it and come back and pick it up. But, he's my father-in-law. I know the guy. It's not like he's a criminal. And so that seems a lot of trouble for not stopping much crime. In Washington State, if you want to loan your next-door neighbor a rifle so they can go hunting, you've got to not only go through a background check to temporarily loan him that rifle, and he's got to wait a couple days, or I think it may be 10 days there in Washington State as well. But when he wants to give your rifle back to you, you've got to go through a background check again for that, wow, for him returning the gun to you. So not many criminals get their guns from businesses or anything like that. They get them, they steal them, or they have someone who can legally buy them and transfer them illegally to them, girlfriends or whatnot. Yeah. And, Joe Biden mentions that in his statement that he's going to, end the girlfriend loophole or boyfriend loophole. I'm not sure which one he calls it. But the thing is, it's already illegal to buy a weapon and transfer it to someone you know cannot legally own it. And that's true whether you get a background check or not.
The second thing that Biden is calling for is a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. We actually had a case here in California just 2 weeks ago. There was a bench trial down in San Diego against California's assault weapons ban and calling into question the constitutionality of that. The judge that heard that case is the same one who has struck down the ammunition background checks. He's the same one that struck down the large capacity magazine ban. I think everyone basically assumes that, give him a few months to write a opinion and he's going to strike down California's assault weapons ban.
Well, is that the same as what Biden's calling for? Is it similar?
It's the same as it's basically the same thing.
Hmm.
Again, assault weapons are semi-automatic rifles that have things like a pistol grip rather than kind of the older grip that you see on older rifles. It has an adjustable stock. These are things that are cosmetic. Really, they are ergonomic. They allow a shooter to better handle the firearm, better aim the firearm. And that's just, they say it, well, that, mass shooters can, use that and they can kill more people. Well, in that same, bench trial with the documents that they, testimony the state provided kind of defending their assault weapons ban is, they're asked the question, well, if a person is using one of these firearms for self-defense, don't you want them to be accurate? And they don't really ever answer that question. If I'm using a gun for self-defense, I want to be as accurate as I possibly can. I want to hit the bad guy and only the bad guy. Again, these are things that are that help with the ergonomics, they help with aiming and that sort of thing, but that's important when you're using it for self-defense.
All right, we are in conversation with Matt Hoy from RestrictedArms.com. In this segment, we have been focusing specifically on what President Biden is calling for. He ran on gun control as one of his issues in the presidential campaign. Now he's about to follow up on it. He made a statement over the weekend, the third anniversary of the Parkland shooting. There's one point left. We'll get to that after the news. We're also welcoming your phone calls as well. I invite you to stick around. As always, we look forward to hearing from you. You're listening to The Dave Congleton Show. Don't forget to start your Wednesday morning off with First Look. Andy Morris and Scott Taylor have you covered with everything you need to know to get you out the door from 6 to 9, followed by the Rush Limbaugh Show from 9 until noon. Dave Ramsey checks in from noon until 3. And then Craig and I will be back at 3:05 with the Wednesday edition of Hometown Radio. Glad to have you with us. Always glad to be in conversation with Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. We are talking a little bit about the Biden administration, what President Biden wants to do with your guns. Also, a little bit about this congresswoman in Texas, just to give you a flavor of what might happen. If you want in on the conversation, we certainly welcome your phone calls, 805-543-8830. Or 800-549-5832. We go to Jack on KVEC. Hi, Jack.
Dave, Matt, I certainly enjoyed the segment.
Thank you.
From an intellectual standpoint, Matt, do you think Sheila Jackson Lee is smart enough to just throw everything into the bill under the hopes that they'll get a little bit of this and a little bit of that? That's my first question.
Well, let him answer that one first. It's a good question. What do you say, Matt?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to bring this up because the Democrats have such a narrow majority in the House, and there are definitely seats that they hold right now that if they tried passing something like this, they would lose in 2 years.
Jack, what's your second question?
Second of all, Matt, with respect to some of the ongoing challenges that the NRA has been experiencing, do you think the gun lobby is more powerful today than it was 4 years ago or whatever? What's the general consensus on the political power of the gun law, a gun lobby as it is today?
The NRA's got issues, and I think a lot of them would be solved if Wayne LaPierre just kind of moved on. Is the gun lobby more powerful today than they were 4 years ago? No, because they don't have the ears of people who are running the House and the Senate like they did 4 years ago, and not to mention the White House. So from that standpoint, they're not as strong, at least as the federal level, and influencing policy and laws. That may change. I think Donald Trump was kind of a unique individual when it came to how people responded to him, both pro and con. And I suspect that the estimated 8 million or so brand new first-time gun owners are going to have a political impact in the next few years.
What else from you, Jack?
That's it. Great segment, Dave.
Jack, Matt, thanks for being part of it. Thank you. Jeff is in Atascadero. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Well, good. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I have a question for you. I'm a Vietnam vet, and it's the high-capacity magazine controversy. I remember when I was over there, you know, the clips would hold up 20 rounds, but the prescribed amount to put in was 18 because they would jam after that. And then the Viet Cong and the NVA, they had the AK-47, and they had what they used to call banana clips, and they would hold like about 28 or 30 rounds. But I have actual friends who say to me, well, that's high-capacity magazines, it's just so easy, you can't really change them because it's just a matter of an easy switch on it. To me, that makes no sense. And I may be just naive on knowing how that is nowadays, so I thought your guests could give me some enlightenment on the difference, on the difference between, is it still like there's a smaller clip and there's a bigger clip, and all you have to do is eliminate the larger clip, and, you know, if you're going to go deer hunting, you know, you don't need to have a high-capacity clip, but I'm kind of rambling here, but you know what I'm going after.
Sure, right? Let's get a response. Matt, what do you say?
Yeah, after the Ninth Circuit basically came down last August, I believe it was, and said that the California's ban on high-capacity clips was a violation of the Second Amendment, I had an old family friend who said, you know, what's the, you know, asked basically the same question. What's the logic behind, high capacity? What they really are for most of these guns is standard capacity clips or magazines. And the answer that I gave him was these, your caller's right. This isn't about hunting. This is about self-defense, and it's not about the common kind of self-defense situations. It's about the uncommon ones. We had the case, in Atascadero there 6 or 7 years ago, I think, there was a party or something, and seven guys, did a home invasion and robbed people, and I believe four of them had guns. Now, if all I've got is 10 rounds and I've got seven bad guys and four of them with guns, and criminals don't often follow the law, so maybe their guns have more than 10 rounds in them, I'm at a distinct disadvantage. And that was kind of... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Jeff, is that answering your question?
I think so. So, in other words, the way they got around that was, like you just said, you know, I need to have, you know, instead of just 18 rounds, I need to have 25 or 30 rounds so I can protect myself in case four bad guys come in with 10 rounds. I mean, I follow what you're saying now. So that is the technicality and that they got around that.
Well, and part of the, you know, part of the one of the other reasons why this judge in the Ninth Circuit kind of struck down California's law, and the reason why you still can't buy them now is we've got, we're waiting for word on whether the Ninth Circuit's going to hear this case in bank. That should have, by their rules, they should have already announced that, but, you know, it's the courts and they don't have to follow those necessarily.
Right.
But, you know, the number they came up with was 10. And no one on the state side and none of these kind of pro-gun control groups can answer why 10. They point out in testimony the average self-defense shooting, if a gun is fired, is two rounds. That's the average. Well, then why isn't the limit three? Because that would cover most of them, right? It could cover more than half. Yeah. They could never kind of define why 10 was the right number and why it wouldn't possibly change in the future and always getting smaller.
All right, Jeff, I appreciate the call. Thank you, and thank you for your service. Appreciate your participating and the conversation tonight with Matt Hoy from RestrictedArms.com. Eric, number one, is on KVEC. Hi, Eric.
Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah, I had a quick question for Jeff. I was wondering on federal registration, and the reason I ask your opinion on this is just because, like, you look at Georgia and New York and the gun flow that goes back and forth and the ease of tracking, if that makes any sense.
Well, federal, currently it's illegal for the federal government to keep a registry of all of the firearms. When you buy a firearm from a licensed dealer, they run a background check, and then they're supposed to discard that information at the federal level. The dealer themselves is required to keep that record, though, for as long as they're in business, and when they go out of business, they have to transfer those records to Washington, D.C. You know, it's the concern is always that if you've got a registry of everyone who owns a gun, then at some point you may get, you know, again, a tyrannical government decides, well, let's use this registry, let's find who has the guns we don't want them to have, and we'll send people to collect them.
Hmm. Eric, what else?
I get that. It's just there's so much interstate trafficking of weapons, and then once they get to another state, sometimes they become intractable. You know, and you don't know that it came from a stolen, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of places get broken into in Georgia, and then they go to another state, and they never find out that it's a stolen weapon, and that's my only reason for the question.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. 805-543-8830. 800-549-5832. We invite your phone calls from Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. As we talk about what the Biden administration is planning in terms of guns. Here's Eric, number two, on KVEC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Oh, good, Eric. Thank you.
Yeah, and listening to everything today was kind of rewarding to hear different perspectives from different people. And I kind of want to return to something that Dan Shadwell said at the end of his last interview, that it would advantage the Biden administration to involve people who are conservatives when they're looking at these new laws. And by the same token, I think when we look at this, it probably would be healthy to involve the conservatives. They can have different perspectives, and they might come up with a lot better legislation.
What do you think about that, Matt?
I agree, and I think both parties should do it. And I mentioned this off the air to you, Dave, and I kind of want to say it on the air, is the one thing I appreciate about this is that when Biden released this statement, it was a call on Congress to act. That is how our system is supposed to work. Congress passes laws, the president signs or vetoes it, Congress has the option to override it. Executive orders aren't the way we are supposed to run our government. If we are making agreements, you know, this gets a little farther afield, but if we're making agreements with foreign countries like Iran or the Paris Accord, well, if we don't want it flip-flopping every time there's a change of administration, there's a method for that. And it's you put these treaties to the Senate to approve, and then they become law. So I appreciate Joe Biden doing that. I hope that he sticks to it, although I guess there was some comments made at the White House press briefing that he is thinking about doing some executive orders. I don't know how legal those are be. I'm almost positive they will prompt lawsuits. And again, when a Republican's back in the White House, and eventually that will happen, it gets reversed.
Yeah, sure.
So,
all right. Eric, what else do you want to say?
Well, I'm hopeful that happens, but skeptical because the liberals control the Congress right now.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Eric, thank you very much for calling in. We got a Nick in the Pomo on KVEC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, thank you. You know, that's kind of fresh off the press as far as Biden's new gun proposal, right? I have to admit, I haven't read many of the details.
It just came out today? It was announced over the weekend. It was the third anniversary of the Parkland shooting in Florida. So he chose that to make this announcement.
Well, I had one general comment, and it doesn't have to do with how many bullets go in a gun or anything like that. It's the state of the debate, and it kind of reminds me of the abortion debate. You know, we all have our opinions about things like that, but the parties that want to break it down and make it unmanageable to the point of where it's not a good policy for our country, take it to the state level. And that is exactly what the NRA has done a great job of over the last 50 plus years. I've pushed it to the state level and make it so that the United States has 50 different gun laws in each and every state.
But is that a good thing? Is that a good thing?
No, I think it's horrible. And okay, what it does is it's a great successful path for lobbyist groups that want to muddle something in the mire and make it worthless in terms of its implementation.
Hold that
and
thought.
And that's why the abortion.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hold that thought, Nick. Matt, how do you respond?
Well, I agree with him on some of that and disagree on others. The thing with and I put abortion in this as well as gun laws is there are the writer Kevin Williamson, who writes for National Review Online, has characterized the First Ten Amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, as things that are too important that you idiots don't get to vote on. And that's true to a certain extent. It takes a lot to get a constitutional amendment to change one of those. So if it is something involving freedom of speech, freedom of religion, you know, the Second Amendment, you know, the rights of criminal defendants, the rights against search and seizure, those sorts of things, that's the big stuff. That should be the same across the entire country.
Yeah.
All this other stuff, whether we're going to spend money on a train or something like that, that pushed down to the local level.
Nick,
but the stuff that's...
I don't consider gun rights small stuff. I consider the fact... And one other comment
either.
About this, last comment, is please think about the bigger picture. We have more violent shootings in this country than any country on earth per capita. It's and we can pick that apart, whatever, but it's not good. And I think in the end there has to be a pullback and an agreeability to the idea that we need to have one standard, not 50. There's no way on earth any gun control regulation could ever accomplish anything in this society with 50 different laws.
All right, Nick, thanks for the passion. Appreciate the call. Matt, go ahead and respond.
Yeah, I would kind of take issue with the gun violence statistics. But other than that, I agree that we shouldn't have 50 separate, you know, kind of gun laws. You know, for the most part, again, Second Amendment is stuff you don't get to vote on. So the First Amendment is too. And that should be kind of standard across the nation. The states are, you know, laboratories of democracy.
Don't we get to vote for people based upon their positions, like where they stand on guns? We do get to vote in a way on the Second Amendment, don't we?
Well, yes, you get to vote in a way on the Second Amendment, but you don't get to vote for Sheila Jackson Lee's, which would make the Second Amendment a joke.
I see. All right. Well, we got.
I mean, there's certainly some things around the corner. For example, freedom of speech. You know, libel is still illegal, right. And you can say, okay, well, how long? You know, how long between the libel occurring and you filing suit on it do you have? That's something where you can change the laws around the margins. But the idea that, you know, you have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, those sorts of things are supposed to be kind of above the everyday politics. If you want to change those things, you need to do it the right way, which is a constitutional amendment.
We go to Jim in Aurora Grande. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Jim.
Hi there. You know, the Second Amendment needs to stay as it is. There again, guns don't kill people. People kill people, and I think it's a societal problem. I was also a Vietnam veteran, and I know what it can do to people as far as the rounds go and things like that. The other thing is that I believe that I had a federal firearms license, and I believe that people on the purchase of a gun, the gun should be registered. I'm not so sure about, you know, giving it to, loaning it to a family member. You know who they are. Someone other than that, I believe that they should go to the registration, because I can tell you one thing right now. If one of my guns gets stolen, or if I give a gun or whatever it is to someone that I don't know, if that gun is in a robbery or a murder, I know who's going to be knocking on my door. It's going to be the FBI.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the fact is that gun, if I give it to someone or sell it to someone I do not know, and it could be a problem.
All right, Matt, I need a short response, please.
I would never give a gun to someone I do not know. I also really, you know, it's one thing if it's a family. I mean, right now, if it's a family member and you've got a family member who's got an abusive spouse who's threatened to kill her, I can't loan her a gun.
Right.
So, you know, that's a problem. Or even if it's a family friend I've known for 30 years, I can't loan her a gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I don't believe that the restriction of ammo should be there or whatever. And the 10-round clip is fine with me. As Matt said, if you got some four guys breaking in your house, you've got 10 rounds and they got 20-round clips or whatever, you got a problem.
All right, Jim, thank you for the call, and thank you for your service as well, sir. Let me squeeze in one last call. Here's Scott on KVEC. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
Hello, Matt.
Matt.
Hi.
Matt.
Hey, you know, I think Sheila Jackson has never been in a situation where she's needed a gun, because I don't know why she's, pro-gun control in a state of Texas that is a free gun state. What I have a problem with gun, what I have a problem is that in, like, the state of California that we live in, somebody can break into your house, and if you're not cornered and you have a gun, you cannot use your gun. If there is a window or a door, you're supposed to run out. But if you are cornered, you have the right to use that gun. And, you know, this is where Congress needs to understand that people need self-defense.
I got about a minute. Scott, hang on with me. Matt, I got about a minute for a response.
Not true. California is a stand your ground state. You do not need to, if someone breaks into your home, you have every right to shoot them, even if there's an escape. California is a stand your ground state. It's not by law that's ever been passed by the legislature, but judicial opinion back over 100 years ago read the right to self-defense as not requiring retreat.
Yeah. Scott, I'm out of time. I got to let you go, but thanks for calling in. Thanks to all the calls. Thanks, as always, to Matt Hoy from RestrictedArms.com, who gets 1 minute for a final thought.
I hope that Democrats stick with trying to pass things. We can make, you know, there are some things we can make compromises on. I do not think that most of this will pass. I think if anything passes, it might be the universal background checks. But I don't think he's got the votes in the Senate to pass the other stuff.
Do you know, is Biden a gun owner?
He said he's a gun owner, but I would not take his advice on using those guns. He's advised people to fire their guns into the air to scare off prowlers, yeah, and to fire a shotgun through a locked door at someone that you may fear is going to attack you. Yeah. Do not fire a shotgun through a locked door.
All right. Matt Hoy, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll be back and wrap things up. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. As we wrap things up, I would just like to underscore what John Lindsay said earlier today and ask you, if possible, to conserve your use of electricity to help our fellow Americans who are freezing and facing unbearable conditions throughout the rest of the country. Podcast will be up shortly at 920kvec.com. If you've missed any of today's great segments, thank you for listening. Thank you to my guests. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.